Forum Special Committee on Budget Prioritization, and this afternoon we have natural resource agencies appearing before us, beginning with the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Welcome, Director Ball.
Thank you. Chair Morgan, my name is Lindsey Ball. I'm the Director of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and with me today is Deputy Director Pam Ryan, who oversees the administrative services side of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. We come before you, Chair Morgan, and members of the committee for a brief overview of the budget reductions for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And might I ask, Chair, how deep do you want me to get into detail and a definition today with the time constraints that we have?
We have 20 minutes allotted for your department, which includes questions for the committee. So give us 10 minutes worth of overview.
Okay. Very good. I'll start out just commenting on the two statutes, two primary statutes that drive the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife with respect to managing the commercial fishery and also the fish and wildlife. That's ORS 496.102, which is the state wildlife policy, and ORS 506.109, which is the state's fish food policy. Also along with that, in determining these cuts, we use the Oregon benchmarks. We identified four things earlier this year with ODFW staff, the things that we're going to accomplish in this biennium before the next legislative session, and that was to restore the fiscal integrity of the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, finalize and begin implementation of the native fish conservation policy, comprehensive review of the department's wildlife damage policy. We're also integrate the Oregon plan into ODFW work priorities and become a leader in the Oregon plan for the state of Oregon. In general nature, we went through two different cutting exercises, one that identified administrative services for the department, and then we looked at program cuts as well. Administrative services cuts that we identified initially were specific to temporary cuts only. The program cuts are permanent. If everyone would turn to the second page of their handout, you will see in detail the administrative cuts that we assigned to the agency, and done at 2% increments. The vacant supervisor executive assistant director's office for the first and second year will be held vacant. Vacant administrative specialist, first and second year. We eliminate that publication support in the wildlife in the I&E division. And the vacant publication editor in the wildlife division will also be held vacant and not filled, totaling $256,537 of savings. Of the proposed cuts that are permanent in nature for the program. As an overview, it's quite obvious that the fish division receives the majority of the cuts. That division in the agency receives most of the general funds and most of the lottery funds, but consequently it takes the lion's share of the cuts. How we went through the cuts that are identified here is that I had the region supervisors in, the four region supervisors at our headquarters office, along with Fish Division, Wildlife Division, and Habitat Division. We went through the list of proposed cuts one by one and prioritized them at 2% increments. I feel that the cuts that are revealed to you in the handout today are indicative of some very conscientious work on behalf of the staff. I ask that they first look at the service delivered to Oregon citizens and also the impacts to fish and wildlife management as they identified the cuts in priority order. So I feel that they have done a very adequate job in that. As a brief overview, there are 29 FTEs identified in the program cuts that would be permanent. There are About half of those are currently vacant, the other half are filled. And if you look at the first 2% and 4% cuts, for the most part, you'll note that in those cuts, you will not see just 2 or 3 positions that will be vacated with people occupying those positions. After 4%, almost all the cuts will detail a person in a job today. In addition to that, we were asked to look at the hatcheries, and the hatcheries were also considered as part of the cuts for the 10% plan. Of course, that brings the attention of a lot of people, and I thought probably we might spend a little bit of time discussing that issue. At 2%, we would reduce the Trask River hatchery by eliminating the hatchery manager and having that hatchery supervised out of the Cedar Creek hatchery here at Tillamook. We would also reduce production pass capacity at Cedar Creek and move some fish into some other hatcheries in the state. At a 6% cut, we would reduce Salmon River hatchery, reduce coho to Salmon River, reduce summer steelhead for Sillettes, retain coho production for the STEP program, and retain fall Chinook for the Pacific Salmon Treaty Indicator stock. At the 8% level on hatcheries, we would eliminate Cedar Creek. We would close trout production and trout stocking in many of Oregon's rivers and lakes in western Oregon. And at the 10% level, we would eliminate the North Nehalem River hatchery. In addition to that, we were also asked to put 3 hatcheries up for total cuts and elimination. That is listed as the Trask Hatchery, the Salmon River Hatchery, and the Elk River Hatchery. If we were to close all the hatcheries in order, we would close them by taking Trask first, then the Salmon Hatchery, Salmon River Hatchery, Cedar Creek Hatchery, Elk River Hatchery, and then the Nehalem Hatchery. In addition, on the 3 hatchery closures, we do have a budget breakout as to the cost of operating each facility and a detail of what those hatcheries produce starting on page 7. And on page 10, we have enclosed a map so you can see where the 34 hatcheries are in the state of Oregon and identify where those 5 hatcheries are that we would be closing. And if anyone would like reference material on all the hatcheries, it has the cost and the biennial budget for each hatchery as well as production at each hatchery. I have that available for anyone who might be interested. We can provide that to the committee, Chair Morgan.
If I might ask a question, Director Ball. A fair chunk of the revenue that keeps the department going are it's the money that's received from the selling of fishing licenses, and the fish that can be caught that the licenses are issued for are fish that come out of the hatcheries. What is going to be the revenue impact on the agency of closing these hatcheries?
Chair Morgan, members of the committee, the license sales in the state of Oregon for Department of Fish and Wildlife makes up 40% of the budget. About 80% of the anadromous fish in Oregon that are caught by sport anglers are produced from a hatchery. And most of that is geared towards protecting the wild fish and targeting the hatchery fish, which we feel are fish that should be pursued and taken. And in fact, this last year when we had identified surplus numbers of fish, we increased the bag limit on some of those fish up to 4 per day so people could catch those fish. We do have some estimates on what it means to the economy of Oregon on a total personal income. This is provided to us by Dr. Chris Carter of our department economist. And this is figuring, and of course you have to remember that there are many environmental factors that affect the return rate of fish to a hatchery. Once they're released as a smolt and they go to travel to the ocean and come back, there is a certain mortality factor you have to build in. But if you figure a 2-3% return rate on fish that are released, which is fairly average, there is an estimate on what that is to the personal income in Oregon. And if we close Elk River, that would impact somewhere between $327,000 to $463,000 of personal income Oregonians. If you close the Salmon River, that would impact somewhere between $343,000 and $512,000. If you close Trask River, that would impact personal income by $376,000 to $565,000. The total of which amounts to a range of $1,046,000 to $1,543,000. That just explains what would happen on with respect to the personal income derived from fishery resources share. The exact number of licenses that would not be sold as a result of closing those three hatcheries per se, I don't have at my fingertips. But I can say that we have noticed with the increased returns of salmon for this last year, we have experienced an increase in our license revenues as a result of more angling licenses and salmon steelhead tags being sold. In fact, Dr. Carter told us that we could anticipate easily another $500,000 of revenue to the department as a result of those extra licenses being sold this last year. It may be a little bit more. But Dr. Carter said that he felt very comfortable that you will experience this year a $500,000 increase.
Thank you. The other question I have is a number of the cuts that you've laid on the table here are areas that directly impact the efforts to improve habitat quality and water quality for salmon. I think this may be a question for Mr. Rocco at LFO. Well, what I'm curious about is what the potentialities are to use some of the National Marine Fisheries Service money and Measure 66 money to replace the general fund in what's been offered up here.
Madam Chair, I believe as we have been talking about some of the options, that all things are supposedly on the table at this point, and I think that's going to be one of the options that Legislative Fiscal will bring forward on one of these other lists that we're doing that Representative Canope asked about earlier this morning. We're looking at fungible federal monies that could be used to offset some expenses in the natural resource area.
Thank you. Representative Smith had a question.
When you say federal grants, is that matching with state funds?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, there are some federal grants that require state match.
Okay. Does any of your federal grants allow you to cut spending of state funds?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, I'm not sure.
If you get a federal grant to help you with the program, so say some new grants coming along, will that help you balance your budget, for instance, or is it all state match money?
Chair Morgan, Representative Smith, we have some grants that don't require a match, but there are grants that do require a match. If the state money falls away from those matching state funds with a federal fund, we will lose the federal money.
Mm. I understand. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make certain that looking at page 6, relative to the reduction, after reduction closure analysis, it indicated Trask River would be number 1, Salmon River number 2, Cedar number 3, Elk River number 4, and the Halem number 5. Is that in the order of efficiencies that those, I know that we have some tremendously inefficient hatcheries within the state system that cost us more to run than others. Is that basically based upon efficiencies of these, or are these expendable type of operations that we're doing something that could be done in some other area.
Chair Morgan, Representative Butler, the priority order, Trask, Salmon, Cedar Creek, Elk, and the Nehalem, were felt by our Fisheries Division staff, if you were going to close hatcheries, that you would have the least impact by closing the Trask for the resource and the fishery opportunity that it provides, then to the salmon, then to cedar, elk, and the Nehalem.
Madam Chair, just follow up. I want to make certain that it's based upon, you're saying that it's based upon the least impact, or are these, are we going to close down some very, very efficient hatcheries that are making us a lot of good money return on fish? Are we going to close some of those down that we're able to produce fish for $2 a pound and keep ones open that are costing us $6 and $8 a pound? That's my question.
Chair Morgan, Representative Butler, we did not look at specifically as a cost for fish ratio, but we looked at what was going to have the least impact to the public and to the fish and wildlife resource. And that's how we prioritized the cuts.
Well, Madam Chair, I go back to what I've long questioned here and what I understood was stated last week on the 6th in one of the meetings that was held here in the building, and that is their private industry can produce these fish for a whole lot less than the state can produce them, and if that's the situation, they would ought to close most of the hatcheries and turn to private industry and ask them to produce these fish at a much lesser cost. Because this is an opportunity, as I see it, to look at privatization of these hatcheries and or other opportunities in the fish business to move those dollars and still produce the same number of fish with a whole lot less money. So just by way of consideration, if this prioritization list is not based upon the inefficiency of these hatcheries, then we're probably keeping some hatcheries open that are costing us $8-$9 a pound to produce fish when we can replace those for a little over $2 a pound under the worst of conditions. So I just want to make certain that the ones that are closed are the most inefficient ones, because private hatcheries can do as good a job or better job for the number of dollars we're expending here.
Thank you. Representative Nola.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This actually follows nicely from Representative Butler's line of questioning. In the proposed closures of hatcheries, do you anticipate replacing the product of those hatcheries with purchased fish, or does that product just disappear from the system altogether?
Chair Morgan, Representative Nolan, at this time we anticipate the production from those hatcheries would just simply be eliminated and not replaced.
Further questions or comments? We have used your time up, Director. Thank you very much for coming before us. That was interesting testimony. Call now on the Department of Environmental Quality.
Oh, sure.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Stephanie Halleck, and I'm the director of the Department of Environmental Quality. And with me today is Jim Royce, who is my budget manager. And my testimony is being handed out to you, and I'm just going to pause until you get it, because I want you to have it in front of you so I can refer to it. As I'm sure you all know, our department is responsible for providing leadership in protecting clean air, clean water, and responding to emergencies such as toxic spills that can affect our land quality as well as our water. And we're also in charge of managing the proper disposal of hazardous and solid waste. What I have for you on this testimony is a summary of the general fund reductions. In the handout that I believe you have, there were 21 items submitted by DEQ in priority order. And I'm going to talk a little bit generally about our general fund, and then I'm going to talk about the specific cuts by program. In the testimony, the pie chart shows you that approximately 16.5% of DEQ's operating budget is general fund and lottery. That equates to about $28 million. Therefore, the 10% that we were instructed to take by the Department of Administrative Services is $2.8 million of general fund and lottery. As you can also see in the pie chart, we are primarily funded a little over 63% by other fund, which is fees and cost recovery from our cleanup activities, and 19.9% federal fund. I've also included a table that shows at the top of the second page the specific reduction options by program, which shows the total amount of general fund and lottery in air, water, land quality, and community solutions team, and our support to the legislative fiscal office and the governor's office, and the amount of the reduction and the percentage of that reduction compared to the general fund. I would just say this presentation today is focusing on the long-term program cuts. We had already submitted $589,000 in administrative short-term cuts for this biennium, which my understanding is not part of the rebalance, that your rebalance is going to be focused on permanent long-term, and that's what I'm talking about today. In proposing the cuts, I tried to minimize the impact on our water quality program and specifically on the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds. And we also held harmless the Community Solutions Team because we believe that it is essential for our agency and others to support this new way of doing business with our local partners in government. I'm going to summarize briefly the impact of the cuts by program, starting with air quality, as I've outlined in the testimony. The air quality program, which is an $850,093 cut that you'll see on the little chart I put there, it represents a 16% cut in air quality general fund. It will affect our ability to do sampling and monitoring for air pollution from particulate matter and for some toxics monitoring, although since toxics is an overall priority for the agency, we tried to minimize our impacts of general fund cuts and toxics in general. Secondly, it would reduce our ability to respond to illegal open burning complaints and follow up enforcement on those activities. We also proposed a small reduction to the Lane Regional Air Pollution Authority, which administers our programs in Lane County. And we would also probably have to delay the development of what we call air quality maintenance plans, which are the plans that we work with communities that are at risk of exceeding national air quality and in air quality standards to develop plans so that they do not exceed those standards. In water quality, many of the activities that we do are related to the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds, and some of our key activities like permitting and standards development are already underfunded. I'm sure you heard a lot about our water quality permitting, those of you who were on some of our committees last session. It made it difficult to select the activities to cut, and we did try and identify areas where federal funding, the earlier testimony referred to the National Marine Fisheries grants, where those might be available to substitute funding. For example, we proposed cuts in the Lower Columbia River National Estuary Program, in conducting use attainability analyses, and in a voluntary monitoring program we have in water, in hopes that perhaps those federal dollars would be available to fill in those activities. Unfortunately, we did have to propose some cuts where we do not see an alternative funding source that could affect the Oregon Plan for Salmon and Watersheds in our base monitoring and analytic capability in the laboratory. Also a position that we have that serves as a single point of contact for federal and state agencies who do non-point source work and is an expert on that and in our water quality program. And also we propose to reduce one of our positions in TMDL, total maximum daily load development. And then finally, the very last cut is related to water that we would propose on your list of 21 to take out of all programs is our Environmental Partners for Oregon Communities. This program has helped small communities upgrade wastewater treatment systems. It is possible if that cut were taken, we might be able to talk to the municipalities and see if they'd be interested in funding, restoring the position with a fee, which they weren't interested in doing last session. In land quality, proportionally, the land quality division would take the most general fund cut because they have the least general fund in the program, so that their cut would represent 20% of the general fund in three key program areas. One is service to the hazardous waste program that is provided by the Department of Justice in negotiating consent agreements and interpreting the very complex hazardous waste statutes, and also in fulfilling our legal requirements to the Environmental Protection Agency for delegation of that program. Secondly, we propose to cut our membership in the Northwest Pollution Prevention Roundtable, which is an organization that we belong to that helps us keep abreast of innovations in pollution prevention that we can then pass on to industry through our technical assistance program. And then finally, we propose to shift some of our resources from the spill program to take the general fund from the spill program, but we would replenish that with funding from our cleanup program, but that would then mean a reduction in some of our, potentially in some of our cleanups. And then finally, we do have activities in the department that cut across all programs. They are supported by general fund from air, water, and land quality, but they're housed in the director's office. And we propose to take two cuts there. One is a position that has been coordinating, in my office, that has been coordinating our green permits program, and also our pollution prevention program, some of our work through the Environmental Council of States with the other states in the nation on that I belong to, and that person staffs me on that activity. And also that person was to sit on the interim work group to implement the new tax credit law. And then secondly, in my office, we proposed a position that conducts outreach and public involvement activity in our air quality and water quality program. They coordinate public hearings, do fact sheets, and generally help with our communications in those programs. I would just say that I know that this is not going to be easy for all of you, and I was here last time as a new director and committed to delivering excellence in performance and product. I still intend to meet that commitment. We do have some initiatives going on in the department right now, as I promised to you last time that I will be discussing with you during the interim. I travel around the state to work on our regulatory relationship with small business and with individual Oregonians, and I remain committed to do that. We obviously hope that we don't have a lot of general fund, and we hope that the rebalance will do its best for us, but I do understand that you have a lot of hard choices to make, and I would be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. That was an excellent presentation. Representative Butler.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just had a question relative to the number of full-time positions which were currently filled or which were currently vacant. I noticed that you're proffering a number of positions, and I just wanted to follow up. Are they all currently filled?
Not all are currently filled. It's probably, perhaps Jim can answer for me, maybe half and half. About half are filled and half are vacant at the time.
Just to follow up in that regard. I understand that with regard to the Federal Clean Water Act in 1972, that the federal government has now delayed implementation as a portion of that by as much as 18 months. Is there some way that we could save a year and a half's worth of positions in that particular area?
Actually, Madam Chair, Representative Butler, what the federal government did is they delayed consideration of new TMDL, total maximum daily load regulations, but there are still total maximum daily load regulations on the books. All it means is that we are continuing to implement the regulations that were there before the new ones came along that have now been delayed. But we still have to do the program. We still have federal commitments to meet. So there isn't really a way to save a resource at this point because no requirements have been removed from us yet by the feds.
But they have been delayed by 18 months, and we could pick up 18 months worth of delay at that point in the current budget.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, the only answer I can give you to that is I will be discussing soon with the Region 10 EPA the biennial performance partnership agreement negotiations that we do with them, and I can certainly raise that question with them. That would not be their position at this time. Their position would be there are regulations on the books already. You need Oregon to move forward per your last performance partnership agreement with us, which was written 2 years ago, and meet those commitments. But I do have an opportunity coming soon to raise that question with them. But they've given us no indication that there's a delay in anything as far as their...
Madam Chair, by their own motion, they have delayed the implementation of the standards by 18 months. And if you've got an agreement with them that says that they can delay by 18 months, but by damn, you have to take care of your side of the responsibilities of the state, I'm looking at that and saying that looks like a pretty one-sided agreement to me.
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, I do think there is an opportunity to raise the question. The other thing, quite frankly, that is driving this has been litigation. And we are under a court-agreed schedule to do TMDL by 2007. So while I can have spirited conversations with EPA, which I often do, I do have to be mindful of our obligation to the courts as well.
Thank you.
Ms. Halleck, the Community Solutions Team line item that is almost $900,000. How many staff positions is that in your agency?
Madam Chair, in our agency, that's four.
And there must be other things that contribute to the dollar amount besides the four staff positions?
We have the supplies and services and the indirect that would be included in that as well.
I'm curious as to what it was within the agency that caused you to come to the conclusion that this program should just be exempted from all cuts. And this is kind of an editorial comment, but it is going to be very curious as the other Community Solutions Team agencies come forward to see whether they have also looked at the program in the same light that you have. Can you talk to us about why that one was exempted from cuts?
Madam Chair, I can, and as you know from last session, because you had to listen to me go on about Community Solutions Team, I'm a big fan. I used to run the Eastern Region for DEQ, and I was one of the first agency people to become involved on a Community Solutions Team as a member. And I saw firsthand how it changed the working relationship among state agencies working out in the field, and also how it changed our relationship working with our local partners. And I really, I personally believe in it, and I am on a crusade in my own agency to really change the culture of how we work with each other as natural resource agencies and also with our partners on Community Solutions Team, some of whom are not natural resource agencies. So I have felt pretty strongly the way I've structured this in my agency, my four people, is I have three geographic regions, and then I have my office. I have one of those people in my office who spearheads the program for the agency, and then each one of the other staff is assigned to one of my regional administrators. And their role is really, we participate on nine Community Solutions Team, and I'm not sure how many regional partnerships. And so my staff have been really, really active, and I think, you know, one of the things we will need to do next session, if we still have this program and have these positions, they were given to us limited duration, and we will need to be coming back to you next session and demonstrating what we have done with them and the projects that have been successfully completed that wouldn't have happened if we hadn't had those positions. So I have seen on the ground through the Lower John Day Partnership, through the Central Region when I was in Eastern Oregon, through the Klamath Lake Partnership, we have really done some things that I don't think that we would have done if we didn't have that ethic being nurtured in state government. So I'm a real believer, and I didn't want to cut the program because I think it's the wave of the future, and we need to change how we do business in that regard.
And we have had some very spirited discussions about this because I think that my personal perspective is that there is something basically wrong with systems when you have to design systems that go around them so that things work better, and that we really need to pay closer attention to defining our systems so that everyone does play on a level playing field and we aren't fast-tracking some things at the expense of other things. And we will, I'm sure, continue to have these discussions as we walk down the road here. Are there any, Representative Butler?
Just one other item, and you've brought it up, Madam Chair, and that is the issue of travel. I don't see a great deal of emphasis placed upon savings of travel. Is that somewhere else disclosed in the budget for the savings of in-state, out-of-state, national and international travel?
Madam Chair, Representative Butler, it wasn't a specific piece of this exercise. We can certainly provide that kind of information for you. We had item number 2 on your list was a specific calling out of SNS reduction in our hazardous waste program, some of which was travel. But our travel is generally it isn't necessarily a separate light item budget. We'd be happy to give you information on how much we spend on travel. I know precisely how much I spend because I just had to submit a report to our Environmental Quality Commission, and I spent $2,000 in 3 months.
Thank you.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much. That was a very concise and informative presentation. I will call the Department of Forestry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Jim Brown, the State Forester. I have with me Clark Seeley, who's the Assistant State Forester for Administrative Services. We have a handout that I'm going to briefly lead you through. And there is some detail in this, Madam Chair, and I think what I'd like to do is, and when you see that, just we'll kind of go by that, and what I'd like to do then is summarize the impacts. I think that'd be a more meaningful way to perhaps do that. Maybe while Kirk's handing that out, I'll give you some general background information about the agency that will help put my presentation in context. We run 6 businesses in the agency. We are the fire department on about 16 million acres of forest land in this state, protecting state, private, and some federal lands. That program is paid by both the landowner community and by the state's general fund in order to help protect the public resources. We administer a regulatory program that's called the Forest Practices Act. It's an environmental law that requires landowners to reforest their land after they harvest it, and to comply with Oregon's water quality, air quality, and some other environmental protection features. And that's administered on all state and really on all non-federal lands. We manage 786,000 acres of state-owned forest lands. That's in 2 different ownerships. Partly 130,000 acres is common school lands, and the money goes into the common school fund. The balance are lands that were given to us by the counties to manage on their behalf. And the revenues we keep part, and the rest are distributed to the counties, which in turn goes to local taxing districts, a large part of which are schools. We have a program we call Forestry Assistance. It's a conglomerate of services we provide to the landowner community. The largest chunk is what we call service forestry, and it provides technical advice to woodland owners. We have a very small group in the organization that's a kind of a policy think tank that helps the agency think about forest policy, the Board of Forestry, and we offer advice to you. And then we have the classic administrative services programs. And I'm now on page 2 of my handout. As we thought about this, we synthesized the statutes and the direction the board had given us over time, and have identified core business functions for the agency. One is an ongoing assessment of Oregon's forest and what policies ought to flow from that. Secondly is to minimize the loss of forest resources and values from fire, insects, and disease. Managing state-owned forest lands, and then fourthly, facilitating forest stewardship on private lands. The biennial budget coming out of the for the 2001-03 biennium is $222 million, about $36 million of which is general fund, and the balance is other funds. And about $7 million is in the in what we call administration. And general fund is not discrete in that it's combined frequently by statutory formulas with our other programs. And there, I'll show you a diagram of that at the end of my testimony. On page 3 really is just a breakdown of the budget by program. And then the bottom one on page 3 shows you where the general fund is located in the agency. The bulk of it's in the fire protection program. The next then is within agency administration, and then the assistance program and forest practices. The reduction framework that we used was to look at our legal obligations, the governor's reduction principles, and the natural resource agency goals, the core business functions that I just showed you. We do a strategic plan for the agency. And then we identified some budget principles, and you'll find those at the very back of this document. I won't go into the details of that, but it is attached. On the administrative reductions of the $700,000 target from the $7 million in the administration, was we looked at how do we minimize disruption or reduction in program services to landowners and the public, how do we maintain the ability to manage operational risk, and how do we protect the agency's assets, employees, funds, information, capital, infrastructure. And there's some detail there on page 5 in those two view graphs, and I'll kind of focus later on the on the larger picture. In summary, on the administrative cuts, we would see some delay in services provided and the accomplishments associated with that. A pushback on the replacement of some of our vehicles for 1 to 2 years, particularly our some of our fire engines, which we feel we could hold those a little bit longer. And then maintain agency current service level for the long term. On the program reductions, because we have $36 million of general fund, that would be about a $3.6 million target. And again, we looked at kind of philosophically of how do we both service reductions, that is, quit doing some things, and or organizational structure changes. How could we do business in a different way? And there are a series of policy and management trade-offs associated with that. And we did not, within this framework, propose any program-level fund shifts, although that could be a policy discussion. And it reflects the framework and the organizational management principles, not just a budget exercise. And again, you can see on page 7 in those two view graphs kind of the details of that. Actually, on page 7 and 9. I think really the relevance is if you go to page 10, we've provided a couple bar charts there that each of they're constructed in a way to provide you the most information, and thus they may be a little confusing. The lightly crosshatched bars all add to 100, and they're the percentage of the total reduction that we took in that proposed in general fund. The black is the percentage of the program total that's being reduced. And then the heavy gray hatched is the percentage of program general fund that's being reduced. So as an example, in the fire protection program, the percentage of the total reduction is about 36% of our total reductions coming out of that program. The impact on the program is 2% of the program in total, and it's about 6% of the general fund overall. Or sorry, 8%. My eyes aren't very good. And the same thing is true with the FTE. The biggest impact occurs in forestry assistance, where in the end you would take about 40% of the program's general fund dollars away from that program under the proposal that we have in front of you. Now, the types of impacts, and I'm going to go to the little one-page sheet that there was three-hole punch that you were given now. Kind of what happens and what's left. In a fire protection program, what this proposal does is it eliminates what's called the industrial fire program. That is where we go out on a logging operation and see if it's fire safe. Where basically that'd be a responsibility that the landowner would pick up. And that's really a return, if you will, to where things were a number of years ago. What is protected or what would continue is the department's core fire prevention and fire suppression program. And that we would go away from what's called the most efficient level, that is where you minimize the costs and losses associated with the program. But if you will, in a good year, you would really see no impact. The only place you'd see an impact is if we have a very dry summer. The long-term impact of that is we had a series of bad summers. Is the state's general fund is currently protected by about a $35 million insurance policy from Lloyd's of London. You could either see the cost of that insurance policy go up or it go away if we had a series of bad, really bad seasons and we reduced our fire program too much. In the forestry assistance program, On what's retained is the insect and disease program, where we have entomologists and a pathologist on our staff, and we do an annual aerial survey to see where insect and disease outbreaks are occurring and then provide that information to the landowner. That is retained. The field side of the service forestry program, that is the professional advice we give to woodland owners, what is retained, the general fund side largely goes away. What's retained are the federal cost share program administration, administration of what's called the Forest Resource Trust, a tax program that's called the Western Oregon Small Tract Optional Tax, or WOSTOT. And then we would contemplate under this proposal that we would merge this program with Forest Practices Program and really then deliver services to the landowner community, to the industrial community, and the woodland owner community in a different way in order to better meet their respective objectives. In Forest Practices, again, the field administration of this program is retained. However, there are some reductions in the field Forest Practices foresters as well as the staff. But again, we would, you gave us some new positions in the last, part of the last budget for riparian specialists, and we would actually keep those and, if you will, morph or change some of our current forest practices foresters into doing that type of a work, since that's associated with the Oregon plan, has a very high interest by the landowner community. And then again, this program is contemplated that we would merge it with forestry assistance and reduce the staff, but try to keep intact as many of the services as we could to the landowners. Under agency administration, we would make both at the staff and the field level, we would make some reductions and merge some of the ways in which we do business. And probably the most politically contentious of this is we would propose to combine a couple of our districts at the field level. We wouldn't eliminate our service to the landowner, but just a change of how we would administer that and gain some efficiency there. The impacts of that is some delays in issues analysis and decision making, longer term time frames for policy development, and a reduced capability to respond to constituents in a timely way. So with that, Madam Chair, I would conclude my formal testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Representative Snow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gentlemen, we're looking to put people to work. And how many acres does the state of Oregon have in forests at this point under its management?
We have 786,000 acres.
786,000. How much of that do we cut each year?
We're currently harvesting about 200 million board feet.
200 million board feet. How many in acres? Oh. Let's do same to same. So I can follow you.
Well, given that,
I know it's a little bit. I know it's a little difficult, but
we're operating on about 7,000 to 10,000 acres a year, both thinning as well as per cutting.
Okay. Are there any opportunities to increase the size of the harvest at this time without detrimentally affecting the health of the forest, in order to put some more people to work and keep some mills running?
Madam Chair, Representative Knopp, we are in the process of increasing the harvest currently on the forest as a result of a new forest management plan that the Board of Forestry adopted last January. Most of it is in the area of commercial thinning. Our forest tends to be young as a result of the Tillamook fires and the reforestation that followed that. We have limited opportunities to increase clear-cut harvesting because of the age pattern that we have on the forest. And our thinning program is, I think, our harvest scheduling is scheduled to go to about 250, 270 million board feet from the roughly 200 that we have today. And so some of that's already contemplated. Beyond that, the analysis we did, you show that in the out years, two or three decades out, you take a dip at that time. Again, because of the age structure of our forest.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I had the opportunity to speak to you about this earlier, and I now seems an opportunity to review it. Nowhere in your presentation did I see anything that suggested maybe an internal review of the level of maintenance that you're doing in state forests, specifically roads. I was quite surprised to find out the degree to which roads are maintained to be able to handle urban vehicular traffic in some more isolated areas. Did you, when you went through this, give any thought to maybe having the roads a little less smooth, the gravel a little less fine, any of those sorts of cost savings?
Representative Johnson, I've asked the staff to do that. We have not done that yet. Part of our reason for going to the type of road system we have was not aimed at recreational vehicular traffic, but more as a way, as a direct result of trying to reduce hauling costs associated with the logging. The in the past we we had a pit run based road system, and that was a very large rock system, and we found that the hauling costs that we were being charged by loggers was fairly high, and our maintenance costs on those type of roads was fairly high in terms of sediment as well as grading the roads. We've actually, you know, my experience has been that when we have used the type of system that you saw on the ground, our overall costs have been lower than as opposed to higher. But I have agreed, you know, as you suggested, that we will review that as a way to...
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
The genesis of my question came from a tour that I took in my district of logging practices, private sales right next to public lands. Mm-hmm. And logging roads being used on the private lands for ostensibly the same purpose as on the public lands, and logging occurring quite satisfactorily with private contractors hauling the logs out. And yet on some of the public lands, the roads manicured to a point that you could drive a street sedan down those roads without fear of doing any damage to it at all. And it just seemed to me at the time that there might be the opportunity to find some savings there rather than keeping these very finely manicured and groomed roads. They are, in fact, logging roads.
I agree, Representative Johnson. That's an area that we ought to look at.
Good. Thank you.
I'm committed to doing that.
Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Brown, I'm curious about the rationale that you and your staff and your board, to the extent your board participated, put into something that leads to, I'm looking at page 10, your top graph. Agency administration ultimately taking only a 6% hit when every one of your real programs, the service delivery part of the agency, take a bigger hit. That seems backward to me, and I'd like to understand your rationale.
Madam Chair, Representative Nolan, what we, a lot of your administrative type programs, be it computer services or personnel, have a fairly fixed cost in terms of trying to manage the balance of the agency. And so what we did try to do was to look at, again, by collapsing some of our programs, like service forestry and forest practices, together to have some administrative savings associated with that, as well as the combination of some of our districts that would not reduce the delivery of service on the ground, but does save administrative costs. And then we did make some collapse within Clark's program, some of the services within that. But the kind of the fundamental answer is that most of the administrative services that you're required to do in terms of personnel, accounting, computer service maintenance doesn't go away. And so what we tried to do was look at what can we legitimately, you know, given reductions that were proposed to take here, what can we quit doing within that? And that's kind of the way it came out in our view.
Madam Chair?
Representative Hess.
Thank you. Do you have a ballpark figure that your agency spends on travel?
I'm getting the number here. We did, within this framework, reduce travel, particularly out-of-state travel. We don't have a number off the top. We can provide that for you if you'd like.
That would be helpful.
Thank you.
Well, we did contemplate reduction in travel within this.
you contemplated?
It is in here, yes.
Okay.
Under some of the administrative costs.
Further questions or comments? Representative Nola.
Madam Chair, perhaps this is an appropriate time. We've asked several of the agencies to give us comparisons from 9901 approved general fund. I think rather than ask on an agency-by-agency basis, perhaps we could ask LFO to come up with a summary sheet of each of the agencies. 9901 general fund appropriation, 0103 general fund appropriation, and the delta in those so that we don't have to get them, so that we get them in one consistent fashion and it is more useful for us to compare them.
Madam Chair, that is contained as part of the background information in our document.
Thank you. Representative Hobson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The two field district offices that are identified for possible consolidation or merger, have those been identified, and if so, what?
Madam Chair, Representative Hobson, they have not been specifically identified. Most of our districts protect about 1.2 to 1.8 million acres. We have four districts within the Willamette Valley that are about 600,000 to 700,000 acres each. We're in a conversation with the landowner community now as to how we would propose configuring that. And we're just open that conversation, so I can't tell you specifically. But they are in the Willamette Valley, along the fringes on both sides.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you making this budget presentation to us. I will call the Department of Agriculture. We're also have the Water Resources Department and DLCD lined up. If either of those agencies have handouts to be given to the committee members, could you give them to the committee administrator now so we can hand them out during the switchover and avoid any kind of lag time? Good afternoon, Mr. Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize for the lag time. I think there is a document coming out. See now, for the record, my name is Phil Ward, Director of the Department of Agriculture, and with me today is Lisa Hansen, the Assistant Director of the Department. We're providing to you right now a little three-page summary document that, if I may, Madam Chair, I just would like to hold off long enough for you to get that first page. Because that first page is indeed pertinent to my opening remarks. Madam Chair, on that first page in the little pie chart you see represented there in members is a snapshot of the funding of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. We have a little over $75 million in a biennial budget. But it's important to note that nearly 60% of that is other funds. About 5% of that's federal funds. Less than 30% is general fund money, and the lottery accounts for about 9%. You'll see our agency mission articulated there below. These are the three broad areas in which the agency statutorily functions. It's our job to ensure food safety and provide consumer protection in a number of different areas in the department. We have a statutory charge and funding to protect the natural resource base on agricultural lands in Oregon. And then again, we have a statutory charge and funding to promote the economic development and expand the market opportunities for Oregon agriculture. We attempted, Madam Chair, as we built these reductions, members, to minimize the impact on those key mission areas of our agency. I would refer you to the second page of the document, if I might. And what we've tried to do here is give you a generalized snapshot of the cuts as we go through the order of those, the magnitude of those cuts in the total reduction package. Generally, in the first 2%, we were looking at what we'd call administrative reductions, some things like unspent debt service. We had retired a debt and had some funding left over from that. That made the first 2%. Some vacant positions that we continued to hold open, position reduction. Probably the key element here is a reorganization of our laboratory program that we're proposing to do as a result of these budget cuts. What we're proposing to do is combine two laboratories into one and generate some efficiencies. By that, moving into one facility, reducing staff and reducing the management team managing those what are now two separate laboratories. The final item on that in that first 2% was the bear damage study, which was appropriated this last legislative session by this body, $75,000 to do a study of bear damage on timber, private timberlands, and so this cut would eliminate that. As we move into the 4% range, several other items iterated here, removing a general fund from a small program called the Grain Warehouse Program. There are currently 14 licensed, state-licensed grain warehouses. This would effectively end that program where we audit the books of those warehouses to ensure financial stability. We believe a significant action that you all took this last legislative session in strengthening the lien laws to Oregon agriculture will allow us to do that, and our early reading from the industry is that this move has industry support. This next 4% does articulate a cut in funding to the county fair program, a 10% reduction. It does have a small fund shift in it where we are moving some of the responsibility for funding the management of our Natural Resources Division to the Smoke Management Program, which has never shared in those costs to this time. Some small service and supplies reductions to the Pesticide Analytical Response Center, a 10% reduction in the wildlife services money that we provide to the federal government for predator control, and a 10% reduction in the noxious weed control special grants to counties. So these are all these pass-through reductions, Madam Chair and members, again, are at a percentage reduction to these programs which we fund as an agency. We move into the 6% realm, a reduction in special payments in the shellfish program. These are payments that have gone to counties for surveys of tidal lands in the shellfish program. We've not been utilizing all of these funds recently, and so this would reduce some of those special payments. It also includes a special payment reduction to the soil and water conservation districts. And also in the 6% is a fund shift in our food safety program, which would ultimately move us to a target of 20% general fund and 80% other fund in this program. So this is a program which has significant fee support. This would increase the reliance of this program on those fees. The last fee increase in this program was in 1991. Our calculations at this point would indicate that with this fund shift, we would not need to do a fee increase for 3 to 5 years. As we move to the 8%, again, there's the remainder of the food safety program fund shift is articulated there. There's also a fund shift articulated in the animal health program, which is essentially our veterinary program. It's along the same principle as the food safety fund shift. In this program, recently we actually reduced the license fees that we charge in this program. This would require us to probably move back to the statutory cap within 3 years. The final 10% brings the final articulation of the animal health fund shift. There's a significant reduction in that final 10% of our ability to participate in special market promotions for Oregon agriculture. And there's also the elimination of some of our pest and disease control survey work, which occurs in our plant division. Additionally, there's an administrative specialist position articulated in that 10%. The final item, Madam Chair, I would call your attention to quickly is our version, Representative Nolan, of the information that you were referring to just a few moments ago. You can see articulated there our comparison between the 99-01 and 01-03 budgets, and you see the general fund reductions that were taken in our budget during this last legislative session. So, Madam Chair, that concludes my remarks. We'd be happy to respond to questions if we can.
Questions, comments?
Oh, you're getting off. Oh, no, Representative Hanna.
Thank you. On the mission, the 3 points that you put on your front page or handout, I was wondering if you could talk to me about county fairs for a second and tell me where of those three the county fairs fit into that.
Madam Chair, Representative, the county fairs have I think certainly they fit into our mission in the sense of promoting Oregon agriculture. While they are not extensively an economic development mechanism, I certainly think they fit there ultimately to some extent. However, the county fairs have been in our budget, Madam Chair and Representative, I think as more a matter of default rather than just as a place to enable the state to deliver funding to those county fairs. So essentially, they've been placed there because the state has felt that it's important to fund county fairs, and we've simply been the delivery mechanism.
Well, I was just wondering if it sounds like you're hedging your bets a little bit, but if, I like county fairs as much as anyone else, probably more, but if the choice is raising classroom size or, as the chancellor said, canceling out English 101 versus county fairs, then I know where I'm going to go. And I was just wondering where you put this in your budget in terms of priorities to be cut.
Madam Chair, Representative, again, we felt that all of our pass-through dollars, if the agency were being asked to receive a 10% reduction, then all of those dollars that we passed through to local communities, we felt like needed to reflect that same reduction. I think the issue beyond that, as to whether there should be further funding for county fairs, is an issue for this body. And certainly if you all choose to provide that funding, we will continue to deliver it.
Representative Thank Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I understood what you just said. The county fairs were given by this legislature, the last legislature, $3.1 million. They passed through your agency's budget, and you were suggesting taking a reduction in that pass-through and count it towards your overall reductions, even though those are just pass-through dollars and you, as you characterized it, are the delivery mechanism.
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct. And those dollars were counted in the base dollars from which we needed to derive a 10% cut. So in other words, if those dollars had not been counted in the base from which our 10% cut was calculated, then my logic would not hold.
Thank you.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second page you went through here about your 2, 4, 6, 8, 10% cuts, not now, but later time, could you outline in your speech what those things actually represent in those dollars, and I'd like just give me a written copy of that when you have an opportunity, would you?
Madam Chair, Representative, certainly a written articulation of what the dollar figures.
Yes.
Yes, we'd be happy to do that.
Thank you very much.
Further questions or comments? Thank you very much. I'm sorry, Representative Winters.
Just would like to follow up a little bit on county fairs because my good colleague talked about education. Are there any educational benefits to county fairs?
Madam Chair, Representative, I'm the wrong person to ask that. I'm a retired high school agriculture instructor and basically grew up personally taking advantage of county fair educational opportunities and providing those to young people in this state.
I think probably those of us on this panel that are chronologically advantaged that grew up in this state, probably all of us attended county fairs, and probably all of us all had some educational benefits to the county fairs that we did attend in our years of growing up in this great state of ours.
And Representative Hess, I would be very happy to invite you to the Douglas County Fair.
And the Jackson County Fair.
And the
Multnomah County Fair. Marion County Fair.
Polk County Fair is good too, Matt.
Thank you very much.
Mark, you're just not being fair.
I will call the Water Resources Department.
here in Washington County?
This is,
yeah.
Is
it? Yeah. Fine wine, by the way.
Good afternoon. What I might add at this point is that some of our colleagues have a 4 o'clock commitment, and so we need to be kind of have this all settled out by 4 o'clock. So if we could proceed on that basis, it would be very helpful.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Clary, Director of the Water Resources Department. With me is Bruce Moyer, the head of our administrative division and our chief budget officer. Our handout starts with just a profile of the office and the workload. Organizationally, we've got 5 different divisions. We operate 5 regional offices, 20 water master offices. Our mission's pretty simple, to practice and promote wise long-term water management by providing customer service, resource stewardship, and informed decision-making. We've got a total staff, both state and local funded, of about 170, 150 of them state funded, 20 local funded. That's down from a peak of 185 in the mid-90s. Our field staff is about 74, down from a peak of 82. The next page, workload-wise, we administer about 80,000 water rights, 50,000 surface water rights, 16,000 groundwater, 14,000 reservoirs. 125,000 points of diversions. There are about 200,000 wells in the state of Oregon. In terms of application processing, we process about 1,000 water right applications and extension requests a year, about 600 lease and transfer requests. We've got about 9,000 certificates on backlog. Madam Chair, I would point out that we have reduced that by about 1,400 this year, so we took the committee's request to heart on that. This year, we issued about 100 emergency drought permits and 120 limited licenses. The rest of the handout is our attempt to show our program reductions. Put a lot of information on one chart, both where the reductions are taken in terms of our tiers 1 through 5, the dollar amounts, and the impacts, as well as FTEs. While you're glancing through that, I might just give you a little bit of background on the how and why of our proposed reductions. We operate pretty much as an integrated unit. All of our programs are interrelated. We can't lop off one element without substantially impacting remaining elements. That forced us to a degree to thin the soup in some areas while eliminating activities in others. And you'll see some of those complete eliminations in that summary. We attempted to maintain a balance between public service and resource management responsibilities. We recognize that if we're not serving the public, we'll lose support for managing the resource. If we're not properly managing the resource, we're not serving the public. As you know, the voices of constituent needs can be real loud. People wanting permits, certificates, transfers, so forth. Are less concerned about our budget problems than they are about their needs, and they still expect us to turn around things in the same time frame today with about 145 filled state positions as we did with 160 in the mid-90s. The voices of resource management needs are often harder to hear. Groundwater systems that get stressed to the point of collapse, water conservation opportunities and storage projects that need to be aggressively pursued today in order to meet tomorrow's water needs, and stream flow restoration challenges that are crucial to meeting Oregon Plan objectives and commitments. Both public service and resource management needs, however, crash against the shores of fiscal reality. Water Resource Department receives 80% of its total funding from the general fund, the highest proportion of any natural resource agency. So 6, 8, 10% general fund reductions hit us extremely hard. Obviously, longer term, we need to be real aggressive in terms of increasing federal and other fund resources. We need to revisit our fee structure, and we need to pursue privatization opportunities. The specifics of our reduction philosophy, non-personnel expenditures first, groundwater investigations, water right mapping, interstate coordination, travel, S&S, legal expenses, well construction in the Klamath area,
We know that public service and resource management impacts will occur from these non-personnel expenditures, but they're less immediate than with the personnel cuts. And we're also trying to recognize the long-term investments in staff and defer that loss of investment for as long as possible. Next, vacant positions, starting with limited duration, temporary, and this biennium's expansion positions. We know public service and resource management impacts will occur, but the long-term service delivery capabilities will be maintained by retaining long-term positions. And our last cuts fall in our filled long-term positions. Public service impacts will occur, be long-lasting. Resource management capabilities will be reduced over both the short and long-term, and it'll take the department a long time to recover. At the 10% level, we will experience a 10% or a reduction of 10 full-time equivalents, about 7% of our total state staffing. And with that, Madam Chair, without reading you the chart, I'll leave it for questions.
I want to make some comments on this one because this was a budget that was worked in my subcommittee during the session, and we gave you a lean budget to begin with, and I know that you don't have a lot to cut in this, and I think that one thing that we need to consider as we deliberate the rebalance issues, there's a couple of things here. First of all, I would hope that the Oregon Plan activities that are on your cut list, that we would look to try to find funding within the Measure 66 money or the NITS money to keep those efforts alive. I think we need to very carefully consider the economic development potential that water, the absence or presence of water gives, especially in the rural areas of the state. When we're talking about the Klamath Basin, the adjudication that's going on there right now and the effort to bring the data forward as to what the usage of the water is and what the profiles and the data look like are really critical to getting that area back on its feet and kind of narrowing down the options for people over there. And I think that cutting the programs in your agency beyond the point where you can effectively deliver those services is going to have a real detrimental effect on people who need water in the rural areas in order to be able to grow and stabilize their businesses. In the session, we had a discussion about streamlining your processes, and I wonder if you could comment briefly on what kind of a success you've had in that area.
Madam Chair, we just adopted new rules on our in-stream leasing program, and that was a major focus of those rules in terms of streamlining that. We're moving now into our transfers because as we have become a fully appropriated state, the way we grow is transfer water from one use to another, and we've got a rule advisory committee working on that, and we're hoping to have rules out next spring in that program. But you're right. It's a case of both working smarter with technology. That's why I hate to see some of the technology cuts here, but we needed to put those on the table as well as ensuring that we're asking the right questions, we're helping people get us the right information, and we're making it as simple as possible on both our staff and our applicants.
Further comments or questions from the committee? Thank you very much, Jim. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative.
Thank you. I think this may be a question for LFO rather than for the agency, but looking at the notebook, I see reductions in Attorney General services. It looks like the same amount in about, I don't know, four different places. And what I'm curious about, because I think this is the second agency that's shown a reduction in Attorney General services, is are those savings going to show up somewhere else in the DOJ budget? Because my understanding was that they weren't proposing a reduction but in their budgeted amount, but just in their hourly rate that they were charging to state agencies. So I guess the question is, are those figures going to match up what the agencies are saying they're going to save and what DOJ is reducing in what they're charging the agencies?
Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, those are being offered by this agency in a form that they would not use those services as much. So they will show as a reduction in their expenditures, whether or not that is reflected in the total budget of the Attorney General is a I think is a question that we'd have to follow up on. But they, I don't believe they're proposing a rate reduction at this time. Mm-hmm. It would just be less use of their services.
And just one follow-up, Madam Chair. It looks like you do have a reduction in the central hearings panel.
Right.
Amount that you're paying. Do you have a designated position in the central hearings panel for just water resources? So would this eliminate that position, or is it?
No, Madam Chair. Representative Rosenbaum, we don't anymore. We have several people that handle our work. I think we transferred one, right, Bruce?
Madam Chair, Bruce Moyer with the department. Representative Rosenbaum, we did have an agency hearings officer housed with the agency during the establishment of the Central Hearings Panel. That position was transferred to the Central Hearings Panel. Depending upon what the outcome of the agency, of the Central Hearings Panel agency ultimately comes out to be, that position will either stay there or it'll return to the department. Our charges are based on the prorated cost of that single FTE in relation to the total cost of the Central Hearings Panel. But we do have arbitrary not arbitrary. We have elective cases that we send forward to the Central Hearings Panel that we may elect not to do. We may try to go through alternative dispute resolutions or opportunities like that to reduce those expenses.
So just to follow up, Madam Chair, what I'm looking at is a reduction in the first 2% tier of $13,000 that says it would result in less timely resolution of contested cases, may result in more litigation. What? That doesn't sound like a savings for $15,000.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum, again, it indicates the what we try to do is resolve it informally with our protest staff and our alternative dispute resolution process. If we're not able to resolve it, we have to obviously give the administrative opportunity, right? But we generally, I think, of the protests on our water right applications, only about 14% of them last biennium got to the central hearings panel, and we, continue to work hard on trying to resolve them in-house, if you will. Same with the Attorney General expenses.
Further questions or comments?
I have a question.
On
the central panel again. And we had quite a bit of discussion during the session of whether or not the panel cost us more or cost us less. And I guess my question is, Rocco, of whether or not we have any comparison data to suggest that whether the panel is more costly than if we had been the previous method of where the agency just handled their own hearing.
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, I believe that's a topic that the Joint Legislative Audit Committee will be looking into, and I believe that one of the Judiciary Committees is also going to look into that to see whether or not that has saved money. So that will be forthcoming.
That will be forthcoming. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair calls the Department of Land Conservation and Development. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Karen Ann Ciancibella, and I'm the budget officer as well as the administrative services manager. Our director is on his way here, and I will go ahead and start until he gets here. Okay.
We were just getting on him. Would it be possible for you to speak a little louder?
Okay. Will do.
Madam Chair, I didn't get Karen's last name.
Ciancibella.
No one, I didn't.
Yes. Okay, can I start?
Please do, yeah.
All right. Our total general fund budget is $10,552,839,000. That's in the third sentence. 10% reduction target for us was a little over $1 million. The first category or program we took our reductions is in Measure 56. We were going to reduce administration by $34,824, and that's eliminate hire next to staff, which were temps that we brought in to answer the phones when we do Rider 56 notices out to the local jurisdictions. Also, in the reimbursement category, we would reduce $203,050. And this reduction is based on what we know now of our experience last biennium on the amount that we actually paid out in reimbursement claims. We did not fully expend the total amount that we received in last biennium's budget, so we figured we could reduce here again. Also, we anticipate not having as much rulemaking going on administratively, and then all we're talking about is periodic review notices that have to be sent. I'll go on to the next category was operations. Reduced training, $20,000 for in our operations program. Reduced professional services contracts. This would be areas of database conversion and design, program technical research, publication creation, and any job rotations that we might have had over the past, over the future biennium. Also, we would do a fund shift, which we would use existing staff who are generally funded from the program, from the Oregon plan, and use them, utilize them on federal fund projects.
Pardon my.
The next category was grants. We had a reduction of $50,000. This grant money is a carryover from 9901. The grant category was set aside specifically to develop a model ordinance for the mitigation of hazards and transfer of development rights that may be adopted by other local governments. We awarded $50,000 to Douglas County to develop the ordinances, and therefore no further work is needed this biennium. And then the last court category is general fund grants, reduced $580,000. And here it is, depending on the legislative action and budget notes, this reduction would affect the regional problem solving, dispute resolution, and grants to local governments for planning work. Budget had the difference between 9901 in general fund and 0103 is about 11%. Of that 11%, the majority of it came from funding for the community development program. That gives you an idea of how much we increased over from one biennium to the next. Second reason for the increase would have been salary increases and also increases in the insurance, just the normal salary rollover increases that would have happened anyway. So there isn't really much of an increase for our agency between one biennium to the next. Any questions?
Representative Winters.
Can you tell me, what principles did you use to determine what you would reduce?
Representative Winters, Bill Blosser, I apologize for my coming in tardy.
I guess I'm curious because when I see the dollar amount that your greater reduction is your general fund, your GF grant. So I'm just curious as to the principle that you applied to your reduction process.
Well, we started with a general principle of share the pain, and we took basically half of the total cut. We had about $1 million to take. We took about half out of grants and about half out of our own budget, our own general fund funded activities. That was the key principle that we proceeded from.
The last bullet point that you have in there, general fund grants reduced $580,000. It says depending on legislative action and budget notes. What can you enlarge on that? What does that exactly mean?
It's inelegantly termed a comment to say that you have a budget note in there that tells us how much we're supposed to give out to certain local governments for regional problem solving. So depending on whether you right now the budget note says we must give that money to certain local governments, and it's prescribed how much we give to them. So unless you change that budget note, we still have to give them that money. So we would have to then take the money out of dispute resolution and other grants. That's all that means.
One more question. Did the funding for the Community Solutions Team, can you talk to us about how you looked at that program?
Well, the as Karen Ann said, I'll answer it in two parts. First, the Community Solutions Team was funded last biennium. It just was refunded a different way this biennium. So we had three of the four positions last biennium. We really got a net of one new position this biennium. So for us, it was a continuation of existing program with the possible addition of one person. We chose to do everything we could to retain those positions because they are, from our point of view, what we call field positions. They are people who are out in the field doing work to help communities do good planning. We don't really think of them internally as quote-unquote community solutions. They are doing community solutions work, but they're also basically working with local governments on all the other planning things that they have to do. They are the thing that when we talk to our constituencies, all the stakeholders that care about our programs, that they told us, if you have to cut anything, don't cut field people. We want people in the field helping. So we set a priority not to cut field positions, which include CST.
Okay. Representative Butler.
That answered my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Starr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a kind of an overview or maybe a big picture kind of question. Looking at your proposed cuts, looks like you're cutting from the grants part of your agency, which is really kind of the minor as far as the dollar amount of your agency. Operations is over $7 million. You don't hardly touch the operations side of your agency and the grant side. From my perspective, serving on local government, pretty important. You make the most of your cuts there. There's there's less dollars there overall in an operation, where, as by some of the other presentations we've seen today, we've seen kind of the operations side of the agency is taking the brunt of the cuts as far as instead of the services that the agencies provide. I'm going to make a kind of a comment on that.
Representative Starr Sherling. Two comments for that. One is that if you look at the order in which we prioritize the cuts, we take grants last. So we take all the other operational cuts first, and it depends on how much you guys go for in terms of whether you're going to go for the $720 million or whether you're going to go for $900 million or what you're going to do in terms of your total cut. If you go for only the $720, I think you will find out that you treat all agencies equally. You will barely get to any of the grants. You'll take everything else first. So that's, I think, an important point. Is that clear what I mean by saying that? Okay. The second one, which is perhaps a more delicate issue, is that because of a whole lot of accounting issues, when we begin the biennium, we began with a $500,000 deficit that we had to make up. Because of the way federal funds come in and what they reimburse and don't reimburse and so forth. So unviewed here is that we've already taken $500,000 out of operations to cover that opening deficit. So in effect, our operations cut is $500,000 plus almost $500,000 here. So it's about $1 million. And we're taking $480,000 out of grants. So when I said share the pain, we were looking at it as $1 million out of operations, roughly $500,000 out of, or almost $600,000 out of grants. That complicates it because I know you don't see that, but that's something that we as an agency have had to take care of even before we started this.
Follow up?
And we, I'd be glad to provide all those numbers for you if you wish to see
there's
them.
There's a lot more questions there, but we'll let someone else ask them.
Just a second here. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Blesser. I just want to understand that what you just said about budget notes dictating where grants should go of the remaining grant program that you have. I didn't have the opportunity to work on this budget in any of my committees, so I'm unaware. Were those actually place-named grants in budget notes?
I believe they were. They were for grants or the regional RV COG, not grants pass, or the Rogue Valley COG, and for the Eugene 2050 program. And there were a prescribed amount of money that was to go to them.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
See, and $90,000 went to, and then also the National Scenic Area money that went up in Gorge. That was prescribed.
And so by the time the three prescribed grants are made and your cuts are taken, how much of the grant program remains?
Let's see. The prescribed is 240 out of the 2.5 million. So 2.1 million.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Winters.
I guess, because I think we're all kind of grappling with the way you've outlined this, it would be helpful for me if one, we kind of look at where you were. You talked about the 500 that you came in to session with. If we had actually a summary that showed where you were, what you proposed during session, and what you received, and then put your reductions to balance that off. I think we've asked that of the other agencies that's come forward because it's difficult tracking this. And if I look at administration, and I guess one who really... we're talking about telephone calls, and I know the public needs access, and that's always the front line that we tend to go after first, which causes me some concern because that's usually what ends up later. The public gets more agitated because they don't have access to us. So I guess I would like to see, that's why I asked your principles of setting forth your reduction of how you made them. And not just that everybody feels the pain. We're going to feel a lot of pain before we're finished in this process. But really to get some comparison so that we have a better understanding of how you got to where you have arrived today.
I'd be glad to provide that. Just with respect to the Measure 56 stuff, that reduction, and there's actually two pieces to it, is purely because we feel there will be fewer calls, fewer demands for that money. Not that we legally would be required to pay it. But what we're seeing so far in the biennium is just a big drop in those calls because local governments are just, because of Measure 7, are just not doing the legislative changes, and nor is our commission expecting to do it. So we're actually not thinking we wouldn't answer the phone, but just that the volume will go way down.
That might be a better way of describing it.
We will answer the phone, I assure you.
The Representative Starr?
Getting kind of back to my line of questioning earlier, what I'd really like to see is, according to your programs and the budgets there, I'd like to see how you'd cut 10% out of your operations budget. I'd like to see you prioritize that. If you can bring that information back to this committee, it'd be wonderful.
We would be glad to do that.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is not directly to this agency necessarily. We've got a lot of information today. It's come in kind of bits and pieces at some of these agencies, and this single page we got in this is hard to analyze on the basis of kind of being in a vacuum as far as what their overall budget is, where that budget goes. A synopsis that's uniform for each of these agencies would be very helpful to myself and probably to others in this panel. It always makes me kind of uncomfortable to feel that maybe an agency is protecting its own, so to speak, and passing the loss through to somebody else, another agency, or to another government agency. I'm not accusing anybody of doing that, but it would be better for us, I think, to get information in a way we can understand it better. So I would ask that we have information, as Representative Nolan has suggested, that shows us the budgets over the last two biennium's. and then a breakdown of those budgets very quickly. That information is usually available from LFO, but we have to dig each one out individually, I'd imagine, to get it done.
I think that you, that point has been raised so many times mm-hmm. today, how we have information, but we don't have the context to fit it into. And it's a discussion that I think we need to be having after this session is over.
And, Chair, we can easily provide you with a table that just shows 9901 budgets compared to what the individual agencies received for 2001-03. One of the reasons why we, I didn't mention it this morning, I believe, but one of the reasons why we've been giving you this information is that for every agency that appears before you, there is a table in here and a summary of the agency's budget, what they received for the 0103 legislatively adopted budget, and a table that goes back to 97-99 actuals by fund type and 9901 estimated expenditures by fund type. And there's a further breakdown with the major program areas of the agency. So we thought we could that this information would be useful to you while agencies came forward.
So part of this, I think, then, is going to be just the members of the committee becoming familiar with what you have made available to us. I would just like to generally address the situation, too. This is very difficult for us. I think you've gotten the feeling that we're having a lot of trouble grasping just where you're trying to go from the narrative on the sheet. I find it very difficult to believe that the people that use your services are more supportive of maintaining community solutions than they are of receiving more direct grant funding from the agency. And I just am going back to what Representative Winter said about the basis that you use to prioritize the cuts that you'd offered up to us here. And it is kind of interesting to me that all of the departments that have community solutions funding in them have all decided not to reduce the community solutions funding, which is a very dramatic coming together in what should have been a separate process. I know that you've offered this information up for us to do in the process what we would do with it, but I think that, again, I would just reiterate that in my discussions with local jurisdictions, they are most interested in direct grants.
Mm-hmm.